Could the past hold the answer to a mysterious disease? That's what Jennifer London wondered as she tried to get to the bottom of a condition that was making it impossible for her to work or function normally. She found strange comfort in a biography of Alice James, part of one of the most celebrated families of intellectuals in the 19th century, who suffered from a similar malady. Jennifer is a social worker and essayist and the author of the new book, American Breakdown: Our Ailing Nation, My Body's Revolt, and the 19th Century Woman Who Brought Me Back to Life. Here she is to share five of her key insights.
Hi, I'm Jennifer London, author of American Breakdown, Our Ailing Nation, My Body's Revolt, and the 19th Century Woman Who Brought Me Back to Life. The book interweaves memoir, biography, science, and social criticism to explore the hidden health hazards of life in America. I'm also a licensed clinical social worker and former therapist, but I didn't realize until I taught graduate-level social work how much the thinking that organized my book is related to my education as a social worker. That is, individual problems are reflective of social problems. I'm going to share with you five of the key insights from my book. Insight number one, stories matter. They can provide comfort, inspiration, and new ways of seeing. In 1994, I'd been disabled for 5 years by myalgic encephalomyelitis, chronic fatigue syndrome, ME/CFS, a devastatingly exhausting illness that was dismissed by doctors and CDC researchers alike. When I first read Jean Strauss's biography of the similarly debilitated Alice James, the bright, witty, and neurasthenic sister of two eminent 19th century thinkers, the writer Henry James and the psychologist William James, I felt I had met my Victorian counterpart, my kindred spirit. When Alice wrote with her signature wit, "Though I have no productive worth, I have a certain value as an indestructible quantity," I laughed and then held the book to my heart. Alice's story became my passion and my healing. Why was Alice sick? Why was I? In 2001, I found only a handful of research papers exploring the connections between neurasthenia and ME/CFS. I felt I was onto something, and so I kept digging. I spent years researching American history, 19th century and contemporary toxicology, biology, medical history, economics, environmental history, sociology, chaos theory, and more. And by the time I finished, things were a whole lot clearer. We need stories. Without Alice's, so brilliantly rendered by Jean Strauss, my life would have been narrower and my book would never have been written. When my audiobook's narrator, Anna Caputo, wrote to me to say that she too lives with a poorly understood illness and that she imagined my book did for her something like what Strauss's did for me, I felt like everything had come full circle. And I thought about what she and others might say when they are emboldened to share their stories. Stories seed social change. Insight number two, stories matter. Internalized capitalism binds us. Here in America's culture of runaway capitalism, we've been inculcated with two problematic and interrelated ideologies or stories. One is the belief that our economic standing is a reflection of our value. The other is the social Darwinist notion that the only way to rise to the top is to climb over each other, and that the ones at the top are the very best of us, and the ones who fail to thrive in this culture the worst, the weakest, and the most deserving of failure. Capitalism and ableism go hand in hand. In the first year of my ME/CFS disability, my doctor refused to sign a form exempting me from having to work for my welfare assistance. She told me that I was just depressed and work would be the best thing for me. Perhaps in med school she'd studied sociologist Talcott Parsons' 1951 theory of the sick role. Parsons suggested that as unproductive members of society, the ill entered a role of, quote, sanctioned deviance, which disturbed the social function of society. A doctor's job was to police this deviance, to make sure the ill did not benefit so much from their exemption from normal social roles that they refused their duty to get well. When Jean Strauss, in her 1980 biography of Alice James, compared Alice's, quote, illness career to her brother's public successes, she wrote, "By anybody's standards, a life of incapacitating illness denoted failure and waste." Of course, this is an ableist comment steeped in the ideology of capitalism, one she might not make these 40-some years later. After all, Alice was more than her disability. I love to be productive, believe me, I do. But in the years that I've been contending with ME/CFS and writing American Breakdown, I've learned that America and its people are ailing due to our country's exceptionally punishing form of capitalism. Each of us, like Alice, brings to the world an ineffable spirit. How would we be different if we knew that we are enough? Insight number 3. Stories matter. We actually don't have to work so hard. In America, there's a tremendous amount of pressure on people to calm their own stress with self-care. But at what point is the self-care imperative a form of propaganda meant to keep us focused on our individual shortcomings rather than the failings of our country? Not only is it impossible to adjust to certain stressors, but it would actually be unhealthy and bad for self and society to do so. For instance, should a minimum wage single parent with 2 kids just stop being stressed? Would all the yoga in the world work for that? Or for structural racism? Or anxiety about climate change? And should it? In America, if you are not stressed, you're not working hard enough, or so the story goes. But in reality, job-related stress is estimated to cost American countries more than $300 billion per year in health costs, absenteeism, and poor performance. Some companies have discovered that 4-day work weeks can actually boost efficiency. In the world's largest coordinated pilot program to study the effects of a 4-day work week that didn't cut pay or benefits, researchers found that 71% of employees reported reduced burnout and 43% reported improved mental health. Employee retention increased significantly, and 92% of the 61 organizations that took part in this study decided not to return to the 5-day work week. And here's a bonus. A 2006 study conducted by the Center for Economic and Policy Research estimated that if American work hours matched those of Western European countries, workers would find themselves with an additional 7 weeks off per year, and U.S. energy consumption would decline by about 20%. They also calculated that if that energy savings were directly translated into lower carbon emissions, then the U.S. would have emitted 3% less carbon dioxide in 2003 than it did in 1990. Insight number 4. Stories matter. Empathic, effective doctors listen to their patients' stories. Our medical system fails to support a critical aspect of healthcare, the therapeutic relationship. Research shows that empathy burnout can set in after seeing 10 patients in a day, but doctors average twice that many, working an average of 51 hours a week and sometimes many more. Even before COVID-19, 40% of doctors said they suffered from professional burnout often or all the time. Because most doctors work for large profit-driven entities, they experience themselves, says the writer and cardiologist Sandeep Jahar, as technicians on an assembly line. Under the strain of this system, one study found that doctors interrupt their patients on average 18 seconds after they start speaking. But the best predictor of improvement in patients seeking care for a wide range of common symptoms is not whether the doctor ordered lab tests or which medications were prescribed, but whether the patient felt truly heard in the first visit. Empathy declines during medical training. This isn't surprising given the culture of stress that med students and residents endure and how little empathy they're shown. They're also trained to avoid connecting too deeply with their patients to prevent emotional pain and burnout. But the absence of empathy causes harm to patients and their doctors. Over half of contemporary doctors feel they lack the time to be empathic, but research indicates that connecting with patients makes doctors happier and more fulfilled, and that is a buffer against burnout. Empathic communication skills are critical to good care, not only because they increase patient satisfaction and improve adherence to recommended treatments, but also because they're associated with a decrease in medical errors and an increase in positive outcomes, including reduced pain, lowered blood pressure, alleviation of depression and anxiety, and enhanced healing. Insight number 5. Stories matter. New science offers the possibility of new, expanded stories. René Descartes, the thinker who brought us the words, "I think, therefore I am," was a sickly child whose doctors didn't hide the expectation that he would die young. His father despised him for his weakness. I imagine that Descartes didn't have the best relationship with his body, the betrayer, or the emotions it conveyed. He determined that the mind and body were two separate entities, and thus that the body was essentially a machine that, with study, with the proper kind of study, could be fixed. With these ideas, Descartes forged the path to modern medicine. In the centuries since, the scientific method, with its emphasis on objective observation, has enabled researchers to learn a lot about how our parts work. We've become masters at breaking things down to their smallest components so we can study them, but this fragmented, mechanistic way of viewing our bodies comes at a cost. Treatment based on this paradigm is often isolating and fails to consider the many interconnected systems that influence our health, both inside and outside of our bodies. Cartesian medicine is not adequate to the task of understanding and treating complex multi-system illnesses like ME/CFS, long COVID, and a host of others. It's time to shift into a new paradigm. The surprising antidote is chaos theory. From the butterfly effect, which suggests that something so seemingly innocuous as the flap of a butterfly's wings in Brazil could cause changes in the atmosphere leading to something as momentous as a tornado in Texas, we can understand that, like the weather, like the environment, bodies, too, are complex, multi-influence systems that will never be fully predictable. Chaos theory is now being applied to research in Parkinson's, atrial arrhythmias, epilepsy, and other health conditions. While chaos theory can answer some of the questions that previously were unanswerable, it also leaves room for mystery, for awe, and it invites the humility to truly listen and incorporate the patient as a whole person whose experience, wisdom, and stories can aid diagnosis and improve outcomes. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Jennifer. That was Jennifer London with 5 big ideas from American Breakdown, Our Ailing Nation, My Body's Revolt, and The 19th Century Woman Who Brought Me Back to Life. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.